You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1, powered by Rust-Oleum, home of trusted quality and powerful solutions since 1921. From fabric paint to roof repair, epoxy floor coatings, rust-fighting paint, and more, Rust-Oleum has a solution for every challenge.
All right, this is the official post-match show. Everyone throughout England and Scotland jumping online saying, we got to listen to these three in Toronto. Break down the match.
Yeah.
Just two teams going at it. And there was a lot of mucking in the corner, a lot of grinding, a lot of elbows up, not much action, no scoring, and it's a nil-nil tie, which means in England they're miserable and think they choked. In Scotland they're going to be parading in the streets and think they won.
Wow.
That's the beauty of a draw.
Yeah, I mean, these games, like that's where I think this is the one thing that the NHL got right. There's a winner every night. And I know soccer's a different animal, but, like, don't you feel like when it's over, like, nah. Like, they tied. Like,
I totally agree.
I think
totally
ties agree. Are terrible now. I really do.
And I hate them.
I get it.
If you're
it,
a real fan of the sport, you appreciate the brilliant acts on the pitch.
Yeah.
I understand the history of soccer.
Nil. You don't need to say nil-nil. It's 0-0.
Well, it's nil-nil on the pitch at the match. I mean, that is the vernacular, and if we're going to do it right, that's how we
that's
do
true.
It here on the official postgame show.
That's
but
true.
I get it. That's the history of it. And, again, what they do is they do the proper point structure. If you win, you get three. If you tie, you get one. You lose, you get zero. That allows for a lot more variety. But I've always been a believer in that. I want some sort of finality as a fan. I want to walk out of a building or turn off the TV or the radio and say, okay, I know my team won or my team lost, right? One way or the other. But, again, when you look at a scenario like this, in Scotland, they'll take this as a win. It's a draw, but it's a win. In England, it's a draw, but it's a loss based on the expectations and the difference of sides and difference of talent. But I can only imagine what's been going on overseas. I saw one picture of a guy – allegedly Scottish in Hyde Park, naked, walking around earlier today, pre-gaming, just getting ready for a big match. Nothing
no gear
wrong with
on?
That. That's what I saw, that some guy, he was just trying to get in the mood for the game, get in the mood for the match, and he felt like clothing should be optional. Listen, it's a big game, and we're coming out of COVID. People are starting to get a little bit frisky here. And,
I know, but put some gear on.
Yeah, the cops decided
some gear on.
You can't do that anymore. Mankini, Speedo, something. You got to have something. Like, we get it. We're all excited for the game, but come on.
But, like, how buckled do you have to be? Like, and we've all had too many drinks, been overserved, and done something stupid with when we're drunk. But, like, how buckled do you have to be to let it get to that level? Like, that's another level.
Maybe,
I think it really is.
Maybe the grappler can track him down. Maybe we can grapple, and we'll see if we can find that gentleman who was over in Hyde Park in London. Just setting the scene on enemy territory. That was a Scotsman in England, and that match was at Wembley. And it's a nil-nil draw, so we'll see what that means. We got a bunch of great matches tomorrow, and there's a lot going on this side of the pond as well. We got some pretty massive COVID news that is now married to the National Hockey League and the Stanley Cup playoffs. According to our own Darren Dreger, Dominic Ducharme, the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, has officially tested positive for COVID. Now, the team has not issued a statement yet. The league has not issued a statement. We expect that will come out in the next 10, 15, 20 minutes, if not certainly within the next hour. But you couldn't ask for a bigger disaster when it comes to COVID for so many different reasons. This is the first team that crossed the border, and they haven't even played yet on the way back home. So from my perspective, I looked at this a few different ways. One, you hope Ducharme's okay, but he's been twice vaccinated by all accounts, so I think he's going to be okay. You immediately wonder, okay, has this permeated the room? You know, now are all the players going to be tested? What is going to happen here? Are you going to have a Buffalo or Vancouver situation on your hands? If so, what does that mean for the rest of the playoffs?
It's crazy.
And also, again, selfishly, as a Torontonian here in the city, I was thinking, what does this mean for the Blue Jays pitch? What does it mean for TFC and their pitch? Because I'll bet you the government is feeling squirrely right now. They open up the border. They say, go ahead. You can go. Come home, we'll test you. And
stick
day one.
Stick to the protocols and everything will be fine.
And day one, Ducharme's got COVID. So what is this going to mean for Canadians in general? Because this is somewhat of a test dummy, allowing the Habs to go over, although they're not living freely. They were quarantined in the hotel and, you know, hotel, rink, airport, home.
Right.
And listen, the way this works, maybe he got it when he was still in Montreal and went to Vegas and came home, and now he's just testing positive for the first time. We don't know. But yeah, what a potential mess.
I mean, maybe exposed to – we don't know if he's married with kids and, you know, gets home off the road trip and one of the kids is exposed to it, or the wife. Like, who knows? That's the thing. You don't know the backstory. But they certainly can do the contact tracing, unless, and I know we could let our minds run wild, like he goes out and celebrates a win in Vegas a little too hard and, you know, gets on the plane the next day. But all I could think of with Ducharme, like, he's a guy who wears his mask quite a bit, but he pulls it down and you can see him, like, they called a timeout the other day. Mask was down. He's talking to guys, you know.
That's what I can't figure out, Jamie. Like, the close contact with the coaches, they're sitting in the same room, going over video, doing stuff. How the hell does not a bunch of people not have it as well? That's what I can't figure out.
Yeah, and again, I think it was Arpan Basu who said that. Is the whole team vaccinated? Or
I am not aware of their status.
Like that. So I believe... You know, if you make that choice to get vaccinated, because some people don't, but then it shouldn't affect you that bad, my understanding. But again, this is such a spicy meatball on so many different levels, because this is the conference finals. Can you imagine if they had to shut down for 2 weeks because a few guys got it? And
well, I don't think
that's possible. What if Carey Price got it?
Yeah, I don't get the impression like that's possible. With the Olympics, basically, if you want, you know, if you're going to shut it down, go ahead, but it won't be televised in the States, is my understanding. Right. Like, NBC has basically told the NHL, when the Olympics starts, you don't exist anymore.
Right.
Like, maybe they could find a channel for them, but it seems like a pretty tight deadline. Now, if this is a nuclear option, and we're really putting the cart before the horse, but if that happens, then you have to come up with some sort of plan. It's not fair to the Montreal Canadiens. You know, it's just, you can't just say you have to play, what, junior players? You know? What guys that run the Zamboni are going to be playing for the Habs in the semifinals? You can't have that.
I got a crazy idea, but we got to break.
Okay, come back and we'll get into
that.
Crazy
idea.
The Jays are in Baltimore. Thankfully, they're no longer playing the Yankees anymore. We'll touch on that. There's some big games in the NBA playoffs. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Mail it in Friday on Overdrive, brought to you by Coors Light, Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. Brian Hayes, Yo Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got Rod Brindamore coming up in half an hour.
Nice.
Jack Adams, coach of the year, just got himself a new 3-year deal down in Carolina. Your old teammate, your old roommate, and we'll ask him about...
One day, you can't say that.
One day roommate. I think I remember this story. It just didn't work for you two.
The complete opposite. Like, that is basically the complete opposite. If you had to define it, just go Rod Brindamore, Jeff O'Neill when they were playing.
He just said it. He's nice, the nicest guy in the world, but he's like, I just don't think this can work out. We just went to the Cup Final. Everybody was feeling good. I went out and teed it up with my buddies from Miami. I came home at a weird hour, reeking at like 15 Bud Lights, the whole nine, and he's just sitting there, and he's like, nope.
Yeah, not going to work. That's all right. Well, so we'll put that aside. We don't have to bring that up with Rod, but... We'll ask him about his season, why it's been such a successful transition from, you know, player to coach, and ask him about the scenario that Dominic Ducharme could be facing tonight, where the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, it is our understanding based on reporting from Darren Dreger and others now, that he has tested positive, multiple tests, and it's come in positive for COVID, which would mean a likely shutdown and quarantine for 10 days, which is effectively the rest of the series, right? And if he's tested positive, he's not going to Vegas. He's not going there for Game 5 or Game 7, I would assume. So this could take the coach out of it, which doesn't have to be a completely game-changing scenario for the team. Clearly, it would be much worse if Carey Price had COVID, right, or Shea Weber or Petrie or Suzuki or whoever it might be. But it's a massive change in terms of the tone in the room, behind the bench, potential for chaos behind the bench. And it just throws off the rhythm. And you know that the Habs are terrified and the National Hockey League are terrified. Who else might be dealing with this? Because it could be lurking if it's officially in the room.
Well, and if this is the first day, because they test every day, if this is the first day, all I remember is that trickle out, and I don't want to scare people, but in Vancouver, when when player X got it, the next day two people got it, the next day 10 people got it, and the next day it goes like in 4 or 5 day segments if right. they've been exposed, right? So if this is day one or day two, then there could be somebody else. I'm fingers crossed, and I hope Ducharme's okay. I don't even know what he, you know, would he be coaching through an earpiece, you know, with Alex Burrows? Like, what do you do?
I don't see how you do that on the
hospital bed up in the press box.
Exactly. Like, I think I've told you guys this story before. Brian Maxwell, gritty junior coach, got suspended for like 37 games, sat in a Winnebago in the parking lot, and was wired into his assistant coach while watching it on TV. Like, you know, the conference finals. Like, he's going to want his fingerprint all over this.
I don't see how it can happen, though, Noodles. The game is too fast. Like, imagine you have a little bit of a delay, and you're like, change up the lines, and, like, it's you're already hitting the intermission or whatever.
Yeah,
like, what
exactly.
are you doing, man? You're 2 minutes behind.
Yeah.
You're delayed. Update your Wi-Fi. Figure it out. I feel like this is a Nick Nurse situation. We've been through it here in Toronto when Nurse couldn't coach for the Raptors. Nowhere near as meaningful games. But this is, you know, the Grappler was texting me earlier, and he brings up a good point. Outside of the overarching COVID story, which has been in our lives and been a primary part of our life for the better part of 18 or 19 months, right, and the long-lasting images of playing in front of empty buildings, winning championships in front of, you know, without fans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Over the last week and a half, we've seen John Rahm being told you're out of a tournament when he had a six-shot lead after 54 holes.
Yeah.
And now the head coach of one of the four remaining teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs being told you might be sidelined for upwards of 10-plus days. In other words, if we make the Cup final, we'll see you then. If not, we'll see you in October.
After getting double vaxxed.
After a double vaccination. Right. And well, the win of the season a couple of nights ago. Like, they're coming home to Montreal, some fans in the stands, they got some mojo.
Just the last thing you needed, Hazy. Like, yeah, last thing, man.
It is. It's you really feel horrible for Ducharme and everyone involved. But if you're the players, you got to move on. You know, yeah, like, the players are still on the ice. The players will determine whether or not they're going to win or lose.
It's
not like they were going to win tonight because Dominic Ducharme was going to push all the right buttons. He was going to play a part in that. But what is coaching worth? 5% of an outcome? You know, maybe 10%? I don't know if there is a finite number there. And I'm not downplaying the importance of a coach. It's just the reality. The players are going to dictate how this plays out. It would be
agreed,
exponentially worse if this was a big player or multiple players. And at this point, we just have to wait and see. But I guess Burrows steps in, who's a young guy, not a lot of coaching experience.
Luke Richardson will run it.
Yeah, Luke Richardson will run it, but it's one less guy. They'll bring the eye in the sky down to the bench, whether that's Sean Burke or somebody else. Like, there'll be enough bodies there, but it's just, if Ducharme, and by all accounts, like, we don't know. We don't know how good of a coach he is. I got to be honest, I didn't think he was that good down the stretch in the playoffs here. I think he's been really good as far as his in-game adjustments and his adjustments after a loss, that type of stuff. So if that's just him alone, man, that's a different look. But you're right. The players have to deliver. And, you know, but it's the coach, especially. This is home ice. You got matchups. You got things
that's
that
right.
you want to get going there. And he might be a guy who presses buttons on the bench too. He might be a screamer. He might be a guy who, you know,
he seems very subdued to me, like, behind the bench. And again, that's judging a book by its cover. It seems like a guy who's very, you know, just He's almost like a statue behind the
bench.
He looks
shocked. Every time they flash to him, he looks shocked that something's going on.
Right. He's just like, I think he's so into the game, but I've never seen him being overly animated, overly emotional. But that can be a benefit, right? If your team is a little bit squirrely and you got a guy behind the bench who's pretty calm, right, that can counter the two. Like, that would be the concern, clearly, among the obvious, you know, safety and health of Dominic Ducharme, is the fact that you get someone, let's say it's Luke Richardson, and what if he just, you know, can't handle the heat, or gets, you get too many men on the ice penalty early, and it's just kind of a, what do we got going on here?
You know? Pat Quinn was the best. You can't yell at the refs, guys. And a bad face-off drop off the opening drop, he would throw his gum at the ref onto the ice. Yeah. After giving us the speech, we got to keep our composure, and you can't yell at the refs. 12 seconds in, yell at the ref, throw his gum on the ice. Loved it.
We were there. Butch Goring was the same way. And Butchie was a fashion, you know, I don't know, you'd want to call it a nightmare or whatever. Like, no belt, no socks. He'd be banging on the boards, and he'd throw the door open, be standing there, and just yelling. And sometimes empty buildings, and it just, whatever he said would echo through. And the guys would be just dying on the bench. But it's your coach a lot of times is the pulse of your team. So Richardson is a you know, I think he's very qualified. You hear stories that he might be a guy who is in line to be a head coach in the National Hockey League anyway. So, but it's a big stage, and it's, you know, you're pressed into duty. It's not like, hey, here's the reins in an October on a Tuesday night. Like,
right,
you're trying to get ahead in game three. You're trying to get ahead in this series.
And the NHL has proven, just like every other league, if they can play, they're playing. You know, they're not giving you a day off because your coach isn't there. I don't know what the parameters are going to be if other positive tests come back. Like, that is something they have to be talking about internally right now.
Dude, that would be a mess, man, a serious mess.
Where do you draw the line?
I don't know.
Three regulars out of the lineup, five, seven? Because, you know, they're working on a timeline right now. Their priority is not the Montreal Canadiens and the
COVID
dignity of the playoffs. Their priority is, we got to get this done. Like, we got to get out, and we want to end this whole COVID era and hand out a Stanley Cup, get through the draft, get through free agency, and wake up in September or October, and we're back to normal. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what they're hoping for right now. But you have to consider the significance of this, the potential for an outbreak if it gets to that point. And then you're talking about what the Stanley Cup means, you know, and how you salvage what it's supposed to mean if it gets to a point where it's obvious that an asterisk is going to be placed beside this series if the Habs get to that point. And let's knock on wood, like everyone else, that it doesn't. But, man, it's a scary scene.
You're
right.
It
really is for the NHL. It's a scary scene that they have a positive test on the plane, in the hotel, in the room, and now they have to deal with where it goes from here.
My crazy thought is if there is one or two players that are, you know, on the roster that have been playing regularly and they can't play, wouldn't it be funny? Like, this happened years ago. It happened, I believe, it was Calgary and the Portland Winterhawks. Like, they're Mike Vernon ended up joining a team in the playoffs because their goaltender got hurt or something, so they were like, you can pick up a guy. Could you imagine if the league was like, all right, Carey Price unavailable. You can choose any goaltender who's not playing right now,
right,
and have him fill in. Or, you know, or maybe there's parameters. He has to be a pending unrestricted free agent, so he's nobody's property. So
Freddie,
you know,
Anderson flies
well, no,
in.
But, yeah, Brendan Gallagher's not available. Okay, Zach Hyman's available. He's unrestricted right now. Like, they could bring him in. That would be the craziest scenario.
Hey,
kind of funny.
Yeah, I can't picture that happening. I think it would be far-fetched. But if it happened to Mike Vernon and it happened to Junior, it's a reference point. Something, you know, something's going to have to give here. Let's hope it doesn't get to a point where they have to consider delaying games, shutting down games. But let's be honest about this. It's out of their control now.
Yeah, it really is.
Like, that's
is.
The truth of COVID and the virus. They don't care what your schedule is. They don't care what your plans are. If it's there, guys have it, regardless of vaccinations, you know, regardless of whether or not you're symptomatic or not, if you've just tested positive, that's the rules. And you know the government's going to be watching too, making sure everything's on the up and up.
Agreed.
So Ray Ferraro will join us at 6:05. We'll get his take on all of this. We'll tee up the game tonight, Game 3 Habs and Vegas in Montreal. Rod Brindamore still to come later in the afternoon. But the Jays did it again last night. They're holding a lead going into the seventh inning, and then all hell breaks loose. They love a six-inning game. They're the 27 Yankees if this is a six-inning ballgame. They're the greatest team of all time through six innings. That whole seventh, eighth, ninth thing, that's a bit of a concern for them. Here's our TSN MLB and Jays analyst, Steve Phillips. You got a lot of power in the game, Steve. Do you think you could make the Jays play permanently six-inning games? Because then we might have a World Series champ on our hands.
You know, I've got a shot at making it seven-inning games. They have to put all doubleheaders.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're 100% right. That seventh, eighth, ninth inning becomes an issue for this team. And you know, if you look at their roster, you know, they've got eight relievers on the disabled list right now, the injured list right now. And not many organizations are going to be able to manage that kind of depth and that kind of loss. And honestly, right now, I mean, Romano is the only real guy that Charlie Montoya trusts right now. And that's why I think the other day he let Stripling even stay in as long as he did, because he's like, I just don't want to take him out because I don't know what's going to happen if I do take him out. And so it's a tough spot. Most teams' analytics say don't let the lineup face him the third time around. But I think Charlie Montoya's got to start looking at it, thinking even my starter going third time around on the right day with the right starter is a better option right now than me going to my middle relievers.
Steve, you've seen Charlie Montoya kind of losing it. He had the F-bomb the other day, and he's basically saying these are the guys we got. And everyone's complaining about the bullpen, and it's going on day after day. Nothing changes personnel-wise. You, as a former general manager, would you want to kind of address the media? Because it seems like Ross is really nowhere to be found right now, and it's just Charlie wheeling out there every day having to explain this.
Yeah, I will tell you that you know, I got accused of being out in the media too much, but I thought it was the right and appropriate and necessary thing for a general manager. You know, when the team's winning, you don't have to talk to me, but when the team's losing, I want to answer the questions so that everybody else doesn't have to. I want to take that burden off of them. And, you know, how many times can you get asked, what do you think about your bullpen? What do you think about your bullpen for Charlie? I mean, look, here's the thing. When Charlie's a smart guy. If he keeps bringing in relievers who aren't getting the job done, it's not because he's choosing the wrong reliever. It's just that he doesn't have the right relievers. And so I think it's a personnel issue, not a managerial issue. And I think it's incumbent upon the front office that when things are bad, that you're front and center. You know, and as in, you know, in New York, we always had an executive on the road. If I wasn't there, one of my assistants was there. I was always available. I did a scrum with the media every day because I felt like the more I could answer the questions, the more it relieved it for my manager, the more it relieved it for my coaching staff and for the players, that especially when things weren't going well. I think that it's important that the front office get out there and start to address some of these things. And I think that if it were me, I'd be really aggressive in the trade market right now. There are teams who are out of it. There are other teams like the Twins. You know, they think they're better than what they're playing, so they're maybe not going to make guys. But those teams that are out, I'll overpay to get some bullpen help right now just to stabilize it. Because if you wait until July 23rd, 24th, 25th, you might not be in it still at that point. So I think it's important. I would have Pearson pitching out of the bullpen at AAA and really trying to find some answers in the short term, because you're not just going to have, you're not going to trade for four relievers. You're going to have to hope you get a couple guys and you get some answers from within to piece it together and guys getting healthy that you can put your bullpen back together again.
With Steve Phillips, our Jays analyst. So you and I, we were clashing a few weeks ago because I think you took issue with my approach to Charlie Montoya, where I didn't love the happy-go-lucky all the time from Charlie. And I was being a little bit sarcastic, but I think you were thinking that's a little bit harsh. So I'm going to play this clip for you from earlier today, and I want you to interpret the wise words of Charlie, because this looks like a team, from my perspective, that is remarkably frustrated. that is on the brink of snapping. And yet when he was asked about the morale of the team, here is what Montoyo had to say earlier today.
We're having fun. We're working hard. So you're the only one who's seen us, but that's what, you know, people need to know. That's why I wish you guys were here so you can see it. I don't have to say it, but you've seen us. We're working hard. We're taking on balls. We're trying to get better every day, and people are in a good mood.
Go ahead, Steve. What are we supposed to make of that?
Yeah, so here's the thing. I believe that the position players are, sure, they're frustrated, but what happens, you know, the best thing and worst thing about baseball is that you play every day. It's the best thing because if you have a bad day, you're going to play again tomorrow, and if you're the GOAT, you got a chance to redeem yourself, and you have a chance to go out there and get things done. It's the worst thing because, well, you play every day, and, like, it's a grind. And, you know, what teams do now and what players do is they really trust the process, is that they just commit to a process and think we know there's going to be ups and downs during the course of a season, and you focus on those things that you have control over. So the position players have no control over the bullpen, what they're going to do in a given day, how the starter's going to pitch. They're going about their business, and I really do think Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Kevin Biggio, Marcus Semien, they control the energy flow of that team more than anybody else. Those guys do. And so, you know, I think there is a certain joy that they still play with because they're so naive they don't know any better right now. And the bullpen's a mess. You know, when your closer's not right, you know, the bullpen's a living, breathing organism and the closer's the head. And when your closer's not right, then everything else gets out of whack. And, you know, they just haven't been consistent enough with Dolis in the ninth inning, what he's been trying to do. And so they've got a lot of things to stabilize, but components of the team are doing their thing. And Charlie is, listen, I love his competitiveness, but I also love his resiliency. And that really is a byproduct of the young team that they have. Veterans become more cynical. And they get to be like, well, what the heck? I mean, how many times are we going to go out there and lose games like this? The kids are just like, hey, let's go play. Oh, we're going to play a game in Buffalo today? I mean, it's like they're on a travel team. And you know, hey, tell me where we're playing the game today, and we'll show up. And so I understand to a degree why he sees it a little bit differently than what we all might experience.
With Steve Phillips, they've got 19 games against Baltimore. And game one starting tonight. Baltimore is an absolute mess. The Jays have now played themselves into a tough spot. They're a game below 500. We know the reasoning. You know, it's not the bats. It's not the offense. It really hasn't been the starting rotation either. It's pretty much simply the bullpen and some mental mistakes. They still make some fundamental mistakes, Vladdy included a couple of nights ago. But if you got that many games coming up against Baltimore, if you want to get back in the race, what is a reasonable record for expectation here? Do they need to win 13, 14? How many can we reasonably expect the Jays to win, or better yet, have to win against Baltimore to put themselves in a race come September?
Right. Now, you know, one of the things about it is, you know, oftentimes in the major leagues, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. And, you know, you can play the worst team, but they can be hot all of a sudden. And, you know, it doesn't matter that they're the last place team, they're playing good baseball. That's not the case. Sometimes it actually is who you play, and that's who it is right now. They really have to take advantage of the Orioles. They've lost 19 consecutive road games. And, oh, by the way, that's the second worst streak going on right now. Arizona's lost 23 straight road games. And so I think, you know, as a general manager, I would never want to answer this question. As an analyst, I'll tell you that they need to win this game, and then they need to win the next game. And, you know, honestly, if you don't go 14-5, 13-6 against Baltimore, you know, you've got some challenges. But remember, if they get hot, they can beat the Blue Jays just like they can beat the Yankees on a given day if things start to go better for them.
Well, we'll see what they've got because they are clearly in a tough spot. You mentioned all the injuries, which is 100% a reality, specifically with the bullpen, clearly. But I don't see them doing anything drastic, and I also don't think we can be ultimately surprised because coming into the season, Shapiro and Atkins were the first one to admit they had to upgrade the arms. right? Like they knew it. I think this is way worse than they'd ever imagined, specifically with the bullpen. And I'm sure they'd chalk a lot of that up to the injured list. But how far off reality are we here, Steve, based on where we were in March and what the expectation was with the arms in particular?
Yeah, so I actually think that if now here's the thing, if everybody stayed healthy, then I think that they would have had a pretty decent bullpen that they could fortify as the season went along. Now, there are some calculations that I don't necessarily agree with. Like Tyler Chatwood, for me, doesn't throw enough strikes. He never has, and I don't believe he ever will. Now, there's a day that he can, but those days where he walks the bases loaded, they happen. They've happened throughout his career. I've never really trusted him enough to throw strikes. Now, on a given day, his stuff can be electric and he can strike out the side. But, you know, Merriweather really looked like he was going to be lights out in that first series. And you thought Merriweather and Romano and then Dolis there, and then you get Borucki in from the left side, and you start thinking about how it can piece together. But all of those guys have gone down at one point or another, so... look, I think it's going to be a really tough road for them to come back and certainly win the division is going to be a real challenge. It's not just going to be the Jays getting hot. It's going to be the division falling back to them a little bit. And Glasnow maybe going down for the Rays could compromise them some. I think the Red Sox are going to fall back to the pack. I don't believe in their pitching. But the Yankees, I think, are going to get better, and they're playing better now. And I think the rest of the American League, the Astros and Oakland A's, are going to be good. And so the challenge is going to be, can they make up the ground right now? And look, they can go on a hot streak, win 9 out of 10, and get right back into the mix of everything. But to do that, they're going to have to be consistent. It's going to have to be really good starting pitching, really good bullpen, and not making mental errors. And right now, they're not showing the ability to do that with the personnel they have.
All right, Steve, we'll leave it there. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again next week.
All right, terrific, you guys. Happy Father's Day.
Yep, you too, buddy. There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. Father's Day this weekend.
That was cold for they're not making the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the injuries are a legitimate concern and a legitimate reason, but every team in the league deals with it. But before the season started, what did we talk about? We knew the offense was going to be there. We felt like the fundamentals would naturally grow. They're still not there yet. They still make a lot of bad mistakes. But the arms, that was the question. You looked at the roster, you're like, I don't think they can pitch to 90 right. wins. You know, in a division like this with the Yankees and the Sox and the Rays. So now they're really fighting it, man. They got to go on a significant run. They got to play like, you know, 650 baseball kind of thing, which just doesn't seem possible with these
like
arms.
Everyone's bitching about the arms and the bullpen, Hayes. With their starting pitching, is anyone actually shot that they're running the ground, injuries have happened, and it's just overworked? Like,
exactly.
How can you can be pissed off, but how can you actually be shocked at that?
No, you can't. No. Everyone knew it. Remember, we had Shapiro on before the season started, and we were pumping their tires. Hey, good offseason. Springer's here. Simeon looks good. The kids are growing. And then we're like, okay, now we got to stop with that. What's up with the arms? And Mark was the first one to tell us. He's like, we got some work to do. And if an executive says we have some work to do, they really had some work to do.
Yeah, they got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, yes. Like they were well aware, and this is the reality of what they're dealing with now. But they're still a fun team to watch. They're a young team. The offense is going to be there all year. Springer will return at some point, but they need some help. They need a lot of help with the arms, and they're in Baltimore. That'll help too. Baltimore is a pretty terrible team, so get back on track. Take 2 of 3, if not a sweep this weekend, and dust yourselves off and see where you're at come Monday. Rod Brindamore, Coach of the Year, Jack Adams. He will join us, get his take on the transition from being out of the game to behind the bench and what he's been able to do in Carolina through a few years. He's done a great, great job. He's got a new deal down there, so he's sticking around. Ray Ferraro just after 6 o'clock. We're still waiting word on what's going on in Montreal. Dominic Ducharme has tested positive for COVID. That is via our TSN Hockey insider, Darren Dreger. But as of now, the game is still on. So we'll tee up the game as if it will be on tonight. We'll get to that more. And the U.S. Open continues. Richard Bland, my boy, had himself a great day today. Love Richard Bland. He is 5-under in the clubhouse leading the U.S. Open. And we'll see what happens.
Ricky Bland.
I feel like Rick Bland may not be in the hunt come Sunday, but bask in it while you can, Rick.
Exactly.
Bask in it while you can. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up in about a half an hour. Stephen Caldwell will join us in the next hour as well. See his entrance into the building today?
Legend.
He had the kilt on, the Scottish mask, bagpipers. He was feeling it, man. He'll be jacked up. Scotland winning, well, drawing 0-0. But that's a win for Scotland. It's a loss for England. Scotland's still in the tournament. It's beautiful. That's my team. Actually, I have both teams. Win-win for me. It's all good for me in the pool. Speaking of which, the U.S. Open continues. We'll track that throughout the afternoon. Rod Brind'Amour has had himself a pretty good week. Pretty good few years, right? 3 years behind the bench down in Carolina?
Yep. I'll tell you what, and you know he's a fitness freak. You'll have to ask him, Hazy, if he caught me and Al's brother doing the pro day.
Okay, well, he's got a 6.31 point percentage in 3 years in Carolina. That's a pretty good run, I would say. Picked himself up a Jack Adams Award. He's got a new deal. He's sticking around down in Carolina. Here is Rod Brind'Amour, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. How you doing, Rod?
Hey, guys. How are you?
We're doing pretty well. Do you want to answer that for us? Did you see the O-Dub run
of 40? It's the best thing to start off with because, you know, his old roommate, Jeff Daniels, obviously one of our coaches, pulls us like to the monitor right before a game, and the funniest thing I've seen in 10 years, nonstop, like no doubt about it. Chris Huffline, O-Dog, you know the Huffer. Yeah. We were dying laughing watching that. That was hilarious. And I mean, you can't make that stuff up. That was
oh, you really can't. Like, you can't. It was real. That's the sad thing about it.
It was real. Man. It was, O-Dog, I remember you, Cardinal Gibbons days, 6 a.m. running the track. It was, you were a little faster back then.
Yeah, not much, but I was still faster.
That guy scored 41 in the league, Rod. 41 in the league.
I know. Yeah. Look what happened.
Yeah, he still got it, is what happened.
He still got it.
Beat Al's brother in the 200 when they raced again a couple months later. So there's more material out there for you. I know you've been busy the last few months, but what has this week been like? I'm sure a little bit, you know, bittersweet that you guys are out of the playoffs, but you had an incredible year. You win the Jack Adams. You get a new deal. You're sticking around in Carolina, which we believe is what you were looking for. I mean, how emotional has this week been for you?
Well, you know what? Bittersweet is really it. I mean, it's hard to feel like you should be happy, you know, hard to celebrate when you're watching guys play. I mean, that's what we signed up for here at the start of the year, was to obviously finish the deal, and we didn't. So it's bittersweet. I think it is. Good recognition, though, for our organization. I mean, I said this 100 times, but, you know, you're giving me credit winning this Coach of the Year, but there's no chance that you're not, you know, I'm not talking to you guys about it if we didn't have the horses, we don't have the players, we don't have the support staff. You know, we got it all down there right now. So, like I said, the better question is, how do I not win it with what I have around me, really? Like, we got everything there, and now we just got to, you know, put it together a little bit. So I have the easy job.
Roddy, I know you said you're a Hurricane for life, whatever the comment was, and you wanted your staff to be taken care of. But how, like, you know how I am. I would have said, well, I got you in the playoffs 3 years in a row, and I'm the Coach of the Year, so fork it over. How was that not part of the equation for you? Because you look at some of the cake that some of these guys are making, I would say that's the starting point, or I'm out of here.
Yeah, well, it crossed my mind briefly. I really didn't want it to get there, and it was getting close. You know, it's just my home, O-Dog. It's simple now. I've been here 21 years. My wife's from here. I raised my kids. Everything. There's no reason for me to go somewhere else. And so I know, you know, the grass isn't always greener elsewhere. And I don't know that I could really coach the way I do somewhere else. Like, I think it's part of that thing. One of my aces in the hole, I think, is that I know everybody and I feel really confident and comfortable around everyone. And they know me, and that helps. So, you know, I enjoy it here. We got a good group, and I want to stick it through.
Rod, obviously the way you coach and your coaching style, you can tell the mantra that you have with your group is, it seems like there's a lot of honesty there, but you demand hard work. You know, is that something that you tried to instill in the culture of your group over these last couple of years?
Well, for sure. I mean, every coach is going to say that. I mean, I don't know that any different than anyone else. I think it's, you know, all coaches are going to say this. You know, you don't have any chance if you're not going to be competitive as a group. And I think somebody has to be the most competitive, you know, and if that's us, that's that's the starting point. And so when you have, you know, we say it all the time, but I've got a great leader. Jordan Staal comes to work. I mean, the most underrated player in the league, in my opinion, just how I use him and how he just comes to work every day and does everything. And, you know, that's where it starts for us. And, you know, we're lucky that our young stars have gotten to see him kind of, you know, do his thing, because now they're becoming that. And that's exciting.
You seem so upbeat, Roddy, and I used to sit beside you in the locker room, and I know how you approach it, and you seem like you have a positive approach to the players. How did you handle, and I don't know if this has happened yet, but with so many guys that come through year in and year out, the first time you dealt with a player that you couldn't stand, that had an attitude problem, was lazy, like, how did you say to yourself, I got to deal with this guy now?
Yeah, that's the trick, right? And here's the thing. If that's the case, what I love about it, another reason why you say, why are you sticking around there, when, you know, is I go, you know, when management and we talk, I'll say, this guy's got to go. and they do it. Like, I mean, you know, we don't want to name names, but it started from day one of me taking over here. If you want to go back a few years and start looking at the roster, you know, that's why. And I they give me that kind of freedom to say that. And then they, you know, it doesn't always work. You know how that goes. You can't always, you know, get rid of guys. But that's how it is. And so, you know, obviously we give everybody an opportunity to, you know, change their stripes, so to speak. But as you know, it doesn't really happen that often. So once we identify guys that don't fit, we try to move them on and then bring in guys that do. And that's the goal.
We're chatting with Rod Brindamore, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. How does that approach and that mentality that you're looking for apply to a season like the one you just went through that would have been incredibly difficult for everyone involved, being tested all the time, you know, not being able to live your lives, although that's going on with everyone else around the world. But how challenging was it this year to make the demands you might in a conventional season when you took into consideration how backwards the world was this year?
Well, yeah, that's a great point. I think, you know, at the end of the day, there's no excuses. I mean, I think everyone, like you said, everybody was dealing with it. And I think right away from day one, we were just felt fortunate to be in playing. So, you know, however we had to do it, you know, the guys jumped on board. And again, like I said, if you have the guys in the locker room that are, you know, following your message, and like I said, we have that, then it makes my job really easy. So, We didn't make excuses. We dealt with everything everyone else did. We had COVID run through our team. We had, you know, all that stuff happen, but so did everyone else. And that was just kind of how we approached it. Listen, today's a new day. Just focus on one day at a time, because you just didn't know what was coming around the corner. If someone was going to test positive, if this, you know, you just, why even worry about it? Let's just worry about today. And that's kind of how we approached the year.
Well, with that being the case, I'm sure you're aware of what's going on in Montreal. And if you're not, Dominic Ducharme has tested positive for COVID. So did you guys have any, you know, were you running any drills with the assistants during the year? Like, just in case, if I test positive and I'm out, you got to be prepared. Like, what do you think might be happening in Montreal before the game tonight?
You know what? The coaches get the teams prepared. And then at this point, honestly, I don't know how much coaching really is done. And I don't mean that to, you know, put any, you know, shame on it or whatever. It's just the machine runs at this point. And now you're making little adjustments maybe before the game, but once they drop the puck, let's go. It's a guy, you know, the old dog knows it. The player's got to go execute it. You can flip the lines. You can do this a little bit here or there. Things aren't working, but the game plan's in, and now you got to go execute it. So I'm sure he's still, you know, telling his assistants what they got to do. But they know, like, everyone knows the plan. Everyone knows what has to happen and how it has to get executed. So the message is just maybe someone else is delivering it. And that might not be a bad thing tonight if it's just for a short term.
Roddy, before we get you out of here, you got to tell me, who was taking the attendance? Was Stormy the Pig taking the attendance? Because you guys were saying, like, there's going to be 8,000 people tonight, and there was 28 million people in the building waving towels, and I'm like, wow, that's a big crowd for 8,000. Then it was 11, and then it was all of a sudden, yeah, we're full now. That was quite something.
You might be onto something. I really don't want to go down that road, because it was all good, you know, from our end. And I'll tell you what, I mean, I know up in Canada you guys have missed that. it's something special when you get that back. I mean, that's what the guys play for.
You got to
put the emotion back in the game. Like, no offense, I'll watch the games. You know, I have been watching. I'll watch the, you know, a game down in Florida, Tampa series early, and then I flip it over to the Canadian one, and I'm like, it felt like I'm watching a pre-season game. Even though the game was good, you're still missing that life, you know,
no
and that's what the crowd brings. No juice, and so much better. So if Stormy the Pig had to count it, it was worth it. You know what I mean? It's all good.
Well, we need Stormy the Pig up here if in October. Yeah. There's no fans in the stands for whatever reason. So we'll make a trade. We'll send Carlton the Bear
there
down
or
something.
We'll take it. Yeah. We'll do it for you guys.
Something's got to give. Well, congrats again on a great season, a great run, the Jack Adams and the new deal down there. And we always appreciate you taking time for us. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you, Rod.
All right. Hey, and O-Dog, don't wait 4 more years to do your Olympics, man. Let's get it going again. That was too much fun to watch. So
hey, buddy, NFL training camps are coming up. We will be doing other tests, so get ready.
You got it. Thank you. Appreciate
it, buddy. A lot of material coming your way. There's Rod Brindamore, the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes. Really, what sticks out there is before a game, Al's brother is factoring into what's happening in Carolina. Like, you were a Hurricane. You played there forever. You're one of the best players they've ever had. That's to be expected. But Rod Brindamore was probably like, who's Al's brother? We should have asked him that. Did you ask Jeff Daniels, who's the other guy?
My favorite part about it was 10 minutes before a game.
Yeah. Well, I think I flipped you guys a text in the internal text. There was like another Canadian team's coaches watching it. Like before their game, they were dying. Like it's funny. We forget sometimes who it reaches. You know, like you'll get a note from somebody randomly out of like L.A. or Vegas going, that was brilliant. You know,
that one went viral. I've had I can't tell you how many people I've had talk to me. Like I told you, I played golf with a couple of random guys I didn't know. They didn't know who I was. They weren't sports guys. They weren't into it. And about halfway through the round, after we had gone through the standard procedure, what do you do? Oh, is that right? Yeah, you live around here, blah blah blah. Like 5 holes later, the guy dawns on him. He's like, wait a minute, you're with Jeff O'Neill, right? Like, yeah. He's like, I saw the 40-yard dash. I'm like, so you saw that? You know about the 40-yard dash? That one rang out. People are familiar with it. They know about it. I don't think the vertical jump gets enough love, quite frankly, because that was
for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot of hop, right?
Honestly,
it wasn't a lot of bounce there.
There's 13-inch vertical jump.
Yeah.
They were brilliant, but if you go back and look at it, like all three situations, the one in the parking lot is the most jarring. Like that's the one where you're like, oh, these guys are doing it. And you did it separately.
Well, that's where we put eyes on Al's brother's stride for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Right. That was with the flailing of the hands, the quick hands.
Man, his arms were really moving a lot.
Yeah. A lot.
Like really an abnormal running stride. But
he was moving his head from side to side, too.
Yeah.
It was like a really.
And zero knee bend.
It was not a textbook form. Like, no. It was not exactly what you'd see at the Olympic Games in a month. But that's fine. Oh,
thank you for that update.
That's fine.
Bob Costas from the Olympics.
Yeah. The most jarring part is the beginning where you're like, whoa, he didn't get out of the blocks that quickly.
I was expecting a bit more of a jump off the start. A little bit more lightning out of the gate. But it kind of eased into it. It's like, you know, easing into a warm bath. That was basically it.
And just lowered your way in.
It's all good. It's all good. All right, Ray Ferraro in about 20 minutes. His take on Tampa reversing the script last night, just checking the Islanders into the ground. Like, that Tampa team is so good.
Yeah,
they can win every possible way. Braden Point, 11 goals in the playoffs he's got.
I know.
Like,
crazy.
This guy is turning into
Mark Messier.
The modern-day Mark Messier in terms of playoff performances. Like, he's just a big-game player. He's a leader. He's a guy you know every night. Like, Point's going to show up. He's going to give you something tonight. He's so good. Kucherov, so good. I mean, I don't need to break it down for you guys. But Tampa takes a 2-1 lead.
They've just got the recipe, man, and it's a winning machine right now.
Yep, it is.
Right.
They've figured it out. Like, ever since Columbus slapped them around, they settled back in, they recalibrated, and they're unbeatable now.
Yeah, they win game 2 against the Islanders, and they're going to the island. They know the crowd's going to be jacked up. They're going to be locking them down, and they got to grind out a 2-1 win. And that's exactly what they do.
Yep.
They know it's not going to be 6-3 in a free-flowing game, and they went in there and did the job.
Agreed.
Yeah, exactly. Great. And honestly, late in that third, I didn't feel like the Islanders were going to steal that game.
Well, what's going to happen, what the game is, the game within the game, they call it, is you just wait for the Islanders to start stretching it a little bit that they're uncomfortable with, and then they'll get slaughtered.
Mm-hmm. That's slaughtered. Exactly. Yeah, the Islanders will start cheating, and then
a tiny, doesn't have to be a lot, but if they start saying, you know what, we got to get a goal here, we got to get some offense, then they'll get slaughtered like pigs.
You're right, but I don't think the Islanders are wired that way. I think they will go down playing exactly like that, and they're going to wait for Tampa to get impatient and go, yeah, let's just open it up here, and we'll see. Now, whether Tampa does that or not, I don't know. But I think this is going to be a long series still. I think the Islanders are going to at least get one more game.
I think it's going 6 or 7, too.
No way.
I think you're right. Ray will join us again in about 20 minutes. Stephen Caldwell still to come as well. Scotland, England, 0-0 today, and the group of death picks back up tomorrow, so we'll catch up with Steven. We can't wait for that. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, the playoff face-off is presented by Lay's White Cheddar, and I am not saying this sarcastically at all. I think it's going to be coaching staff on coaching staff tonight in Montreal where the game is ongoing. Dominic Ducharme will not be behind the bench. Mark Bergevin is speaking with the media right now. He said he's at home, he's isolating, he feels fine. Luke Richardson will take over behind the bench with Alex Burrows. Sean Burke is going to go behind the bench.
Yeah.
But if you're Peter DeBoer in Vegas, I mean, is there anything you can really do to not, I guess, take advantage of the situation? I mean, that's the reality.
No.
The head coach is not going to be there. But does it affect Vegas at all, or do they just go out and play their own game?
They just go and play their own game. It's not like you're going to say, oh, watch this. I'm going to trick Luke Richardson. I'm going to put on my first line, and he's going to put on his fourth.
Right.
It's all Vegas. It's just they're not a factor.
He might try and jam up a little bit of their cadence, like either have quick shifts or something like that to see if the coaching staff's on top of it. But the one luxury they do have for tonight and next game is they do have last change. So if something gets caught, they can adjust to it pretty quickly. But you guys heard Rod Brindamore. Rod's like, the guys know. Like, for the most part, you know, first power play, there's a power play. Like, guys have their legs over the boards. They know.
You don't even need
on.
The tap from the coach. You see a line go out, that's your matchup. You're going out. The other guys get off, and I'm going out.
I guess the question will be is if, let's say, the Montreal Canadiens have a tough first period, there's a line that just doesn't have it, then what? You know, then you might have to make adjustments on the fly. And it's not as if they're incapable of doing that. Luke Richardson's been around forever.
Dude, I think the iPhone watch comes into play. We talked about messaging, whatever. I think you get an iPhone watch, you have a look, get this line out more, blah, blah, blah.
It's a factor. During the intermission, for sure, Ducharme's involved. Like, my understanding is it's not like he cannot be involved in some way as long as he's not there.
Dude, there's 35 iPads on the bench. Why not a permanent FaceTime? You just have his face behind the bench.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
That'd be wild,
could you imagine if you had... There was like a 42-inch screen and him on FaceTime, like just
he had
with
the suit on his couch and he's just watching.
He's just like doing the show from home.
Yeah, he's just sitting there. Home. It would be, and that would be the best part. He's yelling and screaming like, "Come on, you got to win that song!" Like,
yelling at guys on FaceTime.
Shea Weber turns around, puts it on mute. Sorry,
yeah, exactly. I think that would be brilliant. That would be the best thing. If it doesn't go well tonight, I would like to see them try that for next game.
I find it hard to believe, but we'll see what happens. The Lay's playoff face-off. Lay's is facing off against Ruffles All Dressed Doritos Sweet Chili Heat and Smart Food White Cheddar with their three new potato chip flavors available for a limited time. Stephen Caldwell, Ray Ferraro still to come. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1, powered by Rust-Oleum, home of trusted quality and powerful solutions since 1921. If you've got a surface to protect or a look you want to transform, home or industry, Rust-Oleum has a solution for every challenge.